welcome to the Sporting Spotlight here on Dublin City FM with me, Breffni Early. For the next half hour, my guest is Olympic marathon runner Mark Keneally. Mark, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Breffni. Delighted to be here.
Mark, from Selbridge.
Yes.
Why running?
It kind of picks you, I think, more than you picking it. I would have played a lot of different sports growing up. I would have played soccer mostly and a bit of GAA. And the school I went to, Salesians in Selbridge, would have been a big sporting school. So you would have always had a chance to do some running. And there would have been cross-country teams entered in different competitions. So I ended up having a bit of an aptitude for it. So then just followed it from there.
What age were you when you kind of first realised that?
I was probably old enough. I mean, I was running for the school from the age of 13 or 14, but I was playing soccer as well at the same time, and that was probably my main sport. So probably 17, 18 before I started to think about focusing on it.
What position did you play in soccer?
Anywhere down the middle. I'm 6'4", so centre back, centre forward, centre midfield.
Yeah, but you weren't 6'4" when you were 12.
I was probably 6 foot. Like, I was quite tall and skinny. So it was always somewhere down the middle. You didn't put me out to the sides because I could win headers. I had an aptitude for distance running. I didn't really want to be a distance runner. You would have rather be a sprinter. Obviously, everyone wants to be a 100 metre sprinter. But I wasn't quick enough for that. So it was what I ended up being good at was cross country initially and then moving into distances.
I'm interested that you say everyone wants to be a sprinter. Is that the belief within athletics?
Yeah, you only end up moving up distances when you're too slow for a shorter distance. Marathons, 10Ks, they all hurt too much. 100 metres is over in 10 seconds. It'd be great to be the best 100 metre runner in the world.
10 seconds, if you can do it 10 seconds. Then you're grand.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Because I always would have thought that people grew up kind of saying, okay, well, I want to be that long distance runner. I want to be the shot putter. I want to be the discus thrower.
No, you kind of find that you're not going to be, I think, one of the shorter sprinters. Fairly quickly, so then after that you kind of follow what you're reasonably good at and go that way. But I think, maybe I'm wrong, maybe some people will correct me, but I definitely think anyone I knew wanted to be the sprinter.
You went to study physio in Trinity?
Well, I studied law first actually for a year. So I went to UCD for a year studying law, got through first year, started second year and wasn't really enjoying it, and then decided to go and do physio then after that. So pretty much straight away. So I suppose I was 19 going on 20 going into physio.
They're very different careers. Yeah. Why law in the first place? Why did that?
I don't remember how that ended up number one on my CAO, but that's what I got offered and I took it. And I always remember as a kid that thinking that physio was what I wanted to do because I wanted to be involved in sport. And then I don't know what had prompted me to pick law, but I decided, right, well, I've been offered it now, so I'm going to go and do it. But I realised fairly quickly in second year it wasn't for me. So then it was onto physio then.
But you'd got the second year of the course?
Yeah. Yeah, I got through first year simply because there was a couple of subjects that were reasonably enjoyable and I got through them and then I just wasn't enjoying it in the second year. It was a case of I got through first year and I was thinking, right, well, it was okay, it wasn't great, but it better improve for me to stay doing this, and it didn't, so over I went.
A lot of people, though, wouldn't have the courage to make that decision to come home to their parents and say, you know what, I think I've made a mistake here. And we're 16 or 18 months into this and...
Yeah, it was tough.
How did that decision...
It was tough, but I'm stubborn. Like, I mean, I didn't like it. And it was just like, it was going to be harder and harder to get me to go to college. So it would have been a case of probably failing second year. So I think the best... we kind of all realised that the best thing was, right, I'm too stubborn to keep doing something that I don't want to do. So let's do something else.
2002, the World Cross Country Championships was your first major international at senior level.
That was amazing. I'd just come out of junior and... It's kind of now, and actually the following years after that, there's an under-23 age group. But in 2001, 2002, there wasn't really a well-developed under-23 age group. So you're coming straight from junior into senior. And it's a hard jump to make. And I literally came out of junior and made the first team it was possible for me to make as a senior, which was kind of unusual. And it was kind of a bit of a shock to me as well. And then the fact that it was on in Dublin as well was amazing. It was the first time we'd had our World Cross in Ireland, I think, since Tracy had won in 78 or 79. So there was a great crowd there. There was a great atmosphere around it. I didn't, at that point, World Cross was divided up into long course and short course, and I made the short course team. I didn't run that well, but I ran okay. And it really, I think coming out of junior and making that quick really encouraged me to sort of think, well, okay, maybe there is something here I can really push on with this.
Mark Carroll's based in the States, right?
He is, he's based in Alabama.
And your club is? Clonliffe Farriers, yes, who are nowhere near where you live.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of absentee training done there.
Yeah.
That might be, people have a perception, I suppose, looking from the outside, looking in, and when it comes to Olympics and stuff, of these people who have all of these people around them. And maybe that's because we see the likes of Roger Federer and Nadal and Murray, who have entourages of people who look after their strength and conditioning and all this. The reality of the situation is that while you have these people dotted around the place, they're not actually with you all day, every day.
No, not all day, every day. But I'm lucky in that I'm not, it's not a very technical sport. I mean, I do work on some, you know, running form type stuff and strength, within strength and conditioning, which I do over in the ESG Sport, which is basically my team now. We work on technical stuff there, but it doesn't require training for marathon and distance running doesn't require huge amounts of technical stuff. So most of it is time on the road, and you don't need people with you all the time doing it. So I'm lucky in that sense, you know. I mean, for me, pair of shoes and the road is pretty much what I need for most of my training, which is great because, you know, no matter where I am, I can train. You know, you've got these Garmin watches now, which tell you how far and how fast you're running. So I mean, it's pretty easy to, you know, you've no excuses not to train.
So at the end of a session, you get a complete breakdown of what you've done.
I know exactly what I've done, how fast I've gone. I'll have targets. Mark will send me over targets to hit for certain workouts, and as you know, I'll be able to see exactly what I've done and how I've done it, and has there was there ups and downs within the session. I mean, it's easier if you're training with other people, and that's something that was difficult over the last number of years in Ireland, that there wasn't groups of athletes training together. But there's a new endurance coach after coming on board in Lakes Ireland, Chris Jones, and there are groups starting to form. So I've actually started to work out with his group, and there are other groups around Dublin as well. So
you say a new coach. The reality is, while he might be new to Athletics Ireland, Chris Jones has been involved in Irish sport for a good while.
Oh, yeah.
Both within the sport of triathlon and as the coach to Fionnuala Britain, who's been one of the most successful Irish distance runners over the last couple of years. How much has Chris brought to the party?
I had my first meeting with him since he took over there, probably 6 weeks ago now, and certainly in terms of what he's planning and the impact he's had in a short space of time has been great. You know, I mean, he's brought a real professionalism to it. He's a lot of plans in place that he's going to try and get through. And even, as I said, in a short space of time, I had gone from probably 2010 without doing a training session with another person, just on my own, to in the last 6 weeks, I've probably done 7 or 8 sessions in groups, which is kind of, for distance runners, gauging yourself off other people is definitely part of it as well. I mean, you can do the training on your own, and you can train really well on your own, but certainly having other people there makes that a little bit easier and can make a session have a little bit more quality. So even having that started already is a massive thing.
Who's in the group that you train with?
It's Chris's group. So, I mean, I get my sessions off Mark, and if it works for me to join in with them, if we're doing similar sessions, he has a group that Fionnuala would be there. She'd be sort of doing her own thing, but then there'd be a guy called Mick Mulhare, Dave McCarthy, Brian Keane, the triathlete, and we've had a couple of others that have come in and out, but they'd be kind of his core athletes that I've worked out with at the moment. And as I said, it's worked really well.
Do you pick up much from the likes of Brian Keane, who's in a different sport but with similarities?
I know Brian a long time. Actually, Brian would have been a runner growing up with me in cross country, and there's a different attitude, like there's a different mindset in triathlon. It's fun, you know. I think it's closer to marathon training than track training. At the moment, I'm doing a little bit more work on track speed and stuff like that, but I can certainly recognise that, you know, triathletes tend to have that more of a marathon mindset, where you're going into a lot of your training sessions with quite a lot of fatigue in the legs, and the goal is basically get through the session, hit the splits. Whereas sometimes on the track, you're running fast, you're feeling good, and the temptation can be to overdo things a little bit. Whereas with a triathlete or with a marathon runner, you're not going to do that because, you know, the next day is going to kill you as well.
When someone comes back to that kind of a group with a medal, say like with Fionnuala over the last few months, does that give everyone a boost around?
I think generally in Irish athletics it does. You know, I mean, it's good to see Irish people competing, and we need to start realizing that we can compete at least on a European stage, and then trying to make the step up to the world stage. The world stage is a big step up from Europeans as well, obviously with the Africans, but you know, we haven't even been competing that well on a European stage, so to see someone doing it, and now there's a few others of us who over the last few years have competed fairly well at European level, so it's time for more people to start stepping up and doing it, and then medals will start to come. And then once you're doing that, and once you're competitive at European level, then athletes are always looking for the next challenge. So the next challenge is getting competitive at a world stage, and it's figuring out a way to do that.
What was the next stage for you? What came after 2002?
From 2002 to 2006, pretty much every year I ran the European Cross Country Championships every year. I was kind of nearly niching myself into cross country at the time. It was only really 2006 that started to go well. 2002, 3, 4 and 5, the European Cross did not go very well considering where I was fitness-wise. I was running quite well domestically and even in the UK and going to European level and just not getting it right. On the track, I had a good year in 2003 where I went to European Under-23s, which was kind of getting kicked off at the time, and I finished 6th, which was a good performance over 5,000. And I kept bringing my PB down over those years as well. But because there's a big gap between what's a good level for a senior in Ireland and what the A standard is, I wasn't getting anywhere close to running an A standard for 04 or 08 Olympics, really. I mean, I was running probably 13:40 for 5,000 and the A standard was 13:20, and 20 seconds is a big jump over 5,000 at that level. So I just wasn't bridging that gap. So while I was progressing, there was something missing, and I got to 2007, 2008, had been really training quite hard and kind of stuck around the 13:40 level. And again, you're getting to European competitions, you're getting to European Cross, World Cross, things like that, competing sort of averagely enough and just not finding the next step. Then I kind of got sick, injured, and had to take a bit of time out. And then after that, when I came back in end of 2008, start of 2009, Mark started coaching me then at that point. And that just seemed to work really well. We just seemed to kind of stumble across a formula. Mark kind of figured out fairly quickly what I needed to do to be able to take, you know, there was times where I was really very fit and not reflecting that in races. You know, I was running sessions that would suggest I could run inside 13:20, and I wasn't doing that in races.
Why is that?
We couldn't figure that out at the time. And then what we figured out with Mark was there was just certain elements of my training that I was going too far towards doing what I was good at. You know, I was good at getting into a good, strong rhythm, which wasn't quite at the pace you needed to be at, but I could do it for ages. I could do it forever. And then when I got to that pace that I needed to be running at, where there's a little bit of a bite, a little bit of hurt with it, I wasn't doing enough of that. So we kind of started tweaking with that and playing with that. So within a year, it was within 10 months of being coached by Mark, I'd run 5K and 10K PBs, and I'd come 8th in the European Cross Country in Dublin. It was a very good field. It's probably one of my best runs ever to date, I would say. And then every year since then, I've run PBs in some one distance or another. I've moved up to the marathon and run well over the marathon. And I just feel like I've stepped up to a different level since being coached by Mark.
Obviously, Mark has been there, done it all as an athlete. How important is it to have somebody like that who knows exactly the pain you're going through in a session, or the disappointment after a race, or the absolute joy after a race?
I think from person to person, it's different. And for me, it's a big thing. You know, I mean, a lot of the time, I can hit a lot of the workout. You know, I mean, I wouldn't say that the training I'm doing now with Mark is hugely different than what I've done before. There are elements that are different that I feel have made a difference. But certainly, it's knowing when to push and when to back off, and knowing what to do at certain times. And because he's made mistakes, and because he's been in situations that he shouldn't have been in because of pushing at the wrong time and doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, that experience has stood to him as a coach, and it certainly makes it, you know, I trust him. You know, there are times when I'm feeling really good and I want to push on in a session, but if he says, listen, enough is enough, it's enough for me to go, right, well, he's done this before, I can back off here. So it kind of gives you a little bit more confidence. And I think that's we're not being uncompetitive because people aren't training hard enough. I think at times we push a little bit too hard, and having that experience from, say, the likes of Mark and Sonia, I mean, they've been to where we've been, in that distance runners want to push all the time. They want to keep training as hard as they can, and it's just recognize them telling you that, look, it's okay to back off every now and then. I think that sometimes makes the difference.
It's that time of the show when we take a little break, okay, and we test your sporting knowledge. Okay. In the spotlight sweat. Have you seen the list of people who've done this before?
No.
Top of the list is Sonia.
All right.
She's got 7.
Okay.
Correct. You have a minute to answer as many questions as you can.
Okay.
How it works is I'll ask you the question. If you don't know the answer, say pass. We'll move on to the next one. Okay. Ready to go?
Yep. The game begins in
3, 2, 1. Ronnie Delaney won a gold medal in the Olympic Games in what year?
1956.
Paul Heshin is a native of which county Galway town?
Athenry.
an international cycling champion and a former GAA president share the same name. What is it?
McQuaid?
Sean Kelly. He played National League basketball for his local club and senior Gaelic football for his county. Who is he?
Morris Fitzgerald.
Liam McHale. In his first ever marathon, he won an Olympic silver medal. Who is he?
John Tracy.
Who was the first Irish woman to win an indoor world athletics championship?
Durable.
At the Barcelona Olympics in 1992, Michael Cruyff became Ireland's first Olympic gold medalist in 36 years. Which sport?
Boxing.
How many Irish players have won golf majors this millennium?
Three.
Four. Dan Martin won a stage in the Tour de France this week. Who was the last Irish man to win a stage at that race?
Stephen Roach.
This week, Andy Murray won the Wimbledon Championship. Who was the last Briton to win the Wimbledon Championship?
Fred Perry.
Incorrect. It was...
Virginia Wade.
Virginia Wade. Yeah. I didn't say men's. It was a bit of a trick one, I'm not going to lie. And actually, I ran out of questions and it made it up on the fly. But that, it was Virginia Wade. Stephen Roach, correct. And you know what year that might be?
92.
Oh, very impressive. Most people say 87. Yeah, 92. The four golfers?
Harrington, McIlroy, McDowell.
And Clark.
Clark.
Yeah, so four. Of course. Boxing, very impressive. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So up there.
Excellent.
Oh, excellent. The one you didn't get, Sean Kelly.
Yeah.
Was the cyclist and the GAA president, excellent, who's now MEP. And Liam McHale played for Mayo and Ballina.
Yeah.
I don't know what the club is, just Ballina Club, I suppose. Down in the basketball. So 8, not a bad score.
That's all right.
Very impressive.
Enough with that.
You put some of your our compatriots to shame, I'm not going to lie. Some of your colleagues in the world of athletics have pretty dismal scores.
Have they?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm not going to name names because I've named them a couple of times now. So it wouldn't be fair to the likes of Colin Griffin to name to call his name out again. Obviously, anyone who's interested, the full list of the scores is available on www.sportingspotlight.com and you can pick it up there. I want to get on to London 2012 and obviously the marathon, you moved up to the distance, you qualified for the games. Talk us through the qualification first of all in terms of actually how you managed to get on the plane.
We decided probably end of 2010 that I was gonna have a crack at the marathon standard. I felt that 5k or 10k was doable, but it was going to be a real push to try and get the standard. And again, 2010, I'd had a bit of an issue with I have this recurring problem with kind of anemia and iron problems. So, and it comes from the intensity of track training. So we decided, right, marathon was probably looking like a more reasonable bet in terms of getting qualified. So started getting ready, and debut was April 11 in Vienna. You're kind of stepping into the unknown with a marathon. I mean, there are a few ways of tackling it, and the first build up we did to a marathon, decided to sort of max out my long run at 23 miles. Some people will say go over, but we decided not to. We decided to be a little bit cautious, and went to Vienna. Was going fine till about 18-20 miles, and then I can vividly remember being in a group of four guys at 20 miles, maybe even more, maybe even 21 miles, and there was a slight rise in the road and they just started running away from me, and I assumed that they were surging, and not, it was just literally bang, I bonked, and the rest of the 4 or 5 miles and after that was just a struggle to get home. Now I somehow managed,
when you say a struggle to go home, what time would you have done that in?
I ran 2:17, but the group I was running with that was 5 miles from, less, probably less than 5 miles from home, two of the guys ran 2:12 and one of the guys, the other two guys were 2:13, 2:14, so I lost 5 minutes on a couple of guys in the space of 4 or 5 miles, so that's quite a lot of time to lose. But I mean, I didn't stop and walk or anything like that. You know, it was a case I just kept myself going to the finish line. When something like that happens, where it is literally, it happens so quickly like that, you're kind of confident that there's something specific has gone wrong and you just need to correct it. So it was, you know, get recovered from it, because it's actually, I find it quite difficult to recover from the marathon distance. I'm a big guy, so I take a lot of pounding. And then when got recovered and I'd done a little bit of testing, and again, Institute of Sport really helped me out over that summer in terms of getting analysis of what had gone wrong and how we could correct it. And decided to get ready and go again for the following day, October, in Amsterdam. And Amsterdam pretty much went as well as I could. I mean, the organisers made a mess of drink stations. So fueling had been a problem the first time round. And then the second time round, I got a drink at 5K and didn't get any more of my water or gels or anything for the rest of the race because of the way they'd set up tables. It was a complete mess.
But just to put that into context, it's different for the elite athletes that you'd be part of, because you can't just take something off the side of the street because someone could put anything in
that. Exactly, yeah.
So you have your own feed stations.
There are feed stations there. And well, I mean, I've only run three marathons, but say the first marathon that I ran in Vienna, what they did was before the race, they said there was probably 30 male elites and they divided it up into groups of six, and they said you're at table one, table two, table three, table four, table five. So there's five tables along, so you look for the number table you're going for, and there's six bottles on the table, pick it up, no problem. Amsterdam is a much bigger elite field. There's probably 60 guys and 60 girls, 60 guys and 40 girls, something like that, and they put all the drinks on one table.
So you're looking for
I got to the first feed station at 5K, and I was with a group. The 5K mat was literally just after the feed station. I was with a group. I had to stop, look for my bottle. I stood there for 20 seconds, looked for my bottle. And as I crossed the 5K mat, the group that I'd been with crossed 20 seconds faster than I did, and I had to chase them down then from 5K to 10K, which wasn't ideal, but I was in good shape, so I was okay. And then for the rest of the race, I wasn't going to do that every
feed
station.
But that's something that you can't legislate for.
No.
And it affects your preparation, because mentally you're wondering in your head, will I get a drink? Will I not get a drink? Even if you go to a fun run in the Phoenix Park, for example, you know there's going to be a feed station at this there. So you can pace yourself, you can prepare for that mentally.
Yeah.
And that's a very important part of the actual event of running, right?
Even
elite level.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, I'd done some preparation beforehand with Phil Moore in the Institute of Sports Psychologists, and we had broken the race down into phases. But, you know, it's one of the other things. I think probably being I was 30 at the time, I'm 32 now, but I think being a little bit older, I didn't panic. You know, it was a case of, right, this is what it is. I'm going to have to do what I can do. And I knew I was going on to try and run inside 2:15. I felt I was in sort of 2:11, 2:12 shape. I felt I had a big sort of gap there that I had to play with. So I was confident enough that even not taking drinks, I was going to be okay to get through the rest of the race. So I just put it out of my head and just ran and kept going. And I felt great. 32, 33, 34, 35K. From sort of 35K on in Amsterdam, I was cramping a little bit in the calves. I had to stop a couple of times and stretch, and lost a little bit of time the last 3 or 4K, but I had enough time in hand that I got in 2:13, so I was well inside the standard then at that point. So that was brilliant. Obviously a standard in the bag, but at the time there was talk of, you know, there was 3 or 4 Irish guys who were looking to get the standard. So I had done it in October. I was 10 months out from the Olympics. There was going to be another round of marathons again in the spring in April that I didn't really want to be a part of, because I got my standard and I just wanted to get ready for London at that point. But until April rolled around, and I think other Irish people could and maybe should have qualified but didn't. But until that rolled around and no one else qualified, you're kind of still wondering, are you going to get picked? What's going to happen? You're trying to prepare as well as you can. So there was kind of an anxious wait for 6 months then after that.
Your own performance in London, I don't want to dwell on it too much because I know it's not something you're particularly happy with.
No. Marathon training is difficult enough, you know, in normal climate, in normal conditions. So we had decided beforehand that I wasn't going to take a chance and go and train in hot weather for London, because you can get sick, you can get injured. You know, you're already putting your body under stress in normal conditions. So doing it in heat is even worse again. So decided not to get ready for hot conditions. So went to London feeling I was in the best shape of my life. I felt I was in 2:10, 2:11 shape. Workouts were going great. Last few workouts over at the holding camp were brilliant, really good. But on the day, I'm not going to say it's something you can't legislate for, but when you make a calculated risk not to get ready for heat, then if it's a hot day, you're in trouble. So the race started at 11, which again is something I don't really understand. I mean, it could have started a lot earlier than that. But anyway, they started it at 11. It was already 25, 26 degrees at the time. And by the end of the race, it was up to 29, 30 degrees. I got through the first 18 miles feeling reasonably okay, although I knew I wasn't popping along. But then 18 miles, 19 miles maybe, I just dehydrated quite badly, and I overheated, and it was a real struggle to just finish it out, to be honest with you. So the last 5-6 miles were a struggle, and you know, that's disappointing, because you get into really good shape. And look, I mean, I'm not saying I was going to be going over there getting a medal, but I mean, you want to run as well as you can. You want to sort of reflect the training that you've done. So it was just a disappointment to not get the best out of myself over there. It was really what I took out of it. I mean, I'm not great at looking at positives in real bad races. Look, I finished it out great, but at the same time, I think the one thing I will take from it is that if you're going to championships, you're going to have to be ready for hot conditions. So in the future, I'm going to have to take some chances around that.
Well, Rio will be a place where there's going to be hot conditions. Is that the plan at the moment? Is that what we're working towards?
Yes, Rio's is next on the... it's not next on the agenda. There's a European Championships marathon next year in Zurich that I hope to get ready for. Every year between now and Rio, the plan is just try and do some sort of marathon training block in some sort of hot conditions and just get myself... It's something you can improve on. It's something you can acclimatise to and something you can work on. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be trying to get better at it each year over the next 3 years. And next year is the first championship I'll be able to run since London, where it's probably going to be in hot conditions in Zurich. So hopefully get an improved performance over there and just keep trying to improve in those hot conditions.
Okay, well, listen, Mark Keneally, thank you for coming in to speak to us today and sharing with us your story about how you've got to where you are in your sporting career. We do let the guest pick the music that plays us out.
Yes.
You have picked something for us, I believe.
Yeah, it's Bruce Springsteen, Reason to Believe.
Reason to Believe from Bruce Springsteen. And why did you pick this?
I think it's funny. Sports people tend to have more bad performances than good performances, and somehow they always manage to pick themselves up and keep going. So it strikes a note with me, this one.
My guest this week in the Sporting Spotlight was Irish Olympic runner Mark Keneally, who competed in the marathon at last year's Games in London. You can listen back to all the episodes of this series on sportingspotlight.com. I've been Breffni Early, and tonight we're going to leave you with Bruce Springsteen, Reason to Believe.
Seen a man stand over a dead dog by a highway ditch. He's looking down, kind of puzzled, poking that dog with a stick. Got his car door flung open, he's standing out on Highway 31. Like if he stood there long enough, that dog get up and run. He struck me kind of fun. Some kind of funny sort of me. Still at the end of every hard day, people find some reason to believe. Now my little love done with a love mean and true. She said, baby, I'll work for you every day, bring my money home to you. One day up and left her, and ever since then, she waits down at the end of that dirt road for young Johnny to come back. Struck me kind of funny, funny, yeah. At the end of every hard-earned day, we'll find some reason to believe. Take a baby to the river, Kyle William, they call him. Wash the baby in the water, take away a little.